It's time for your morning pep talk with Jenna Barr and the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Tuesday to you. It is 9:06 here at News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. You're listening to the Pensacola Expert Panel. Happy Tuesday. I'm Jenna Barr. Joining me is Mike Wiggins. It's time for the Garden Line. Mike.
She's back. Jenna is back.
Oh, I'm excited.
So good to see you.
Thank you. I've missed every single one of you.
Well,
every last one of you.
Well, we have missed
even
you.
Malcolm Ballinger. I missed him so much.
Well, I talked to Malcolm the other day, and he told me how much he was missing you. And
oh, man. We brought it back with the new scooters yesterday. So let me tell you,
I'll bet.
Moving on to gardening today.
I'll bet. You know, the scooters are like us talking about armadillos. It's something you may just want to avoid.
We try to avoid it. But if you do have an armadillo problem, maybe a mole problem, an ant problem, but mostly maybe you are planning for everything coming in the spring. Plus, we are just days away from rose pruning day. And I think yesterday was National Rose Day, which is weird because yesterday was not Valentine's Day.
But pretty close.
But close pretty enough close. To start exactly. Getting ready. 850-437-1620. Get those questions in.
No doubt. While you've been gone, we have talked a lot about winter gardening, specifically, as you mentioned, about planting roses and trees. We spent a long time on why plant trees, which trees to plant, how to plant them, and so I had a great discussion about that because it's still the time to do that. But as we go through today, I thought we'd kind of go through some of the activities we need to be doing right now. Now, I know while you were gone, you probably got out in your yard and did all these things. And your yard probably looks like $1 million right
now,
while the rest of us look winter weary, quite frankly.
No. I did some yard work, mostly like some weeding and pruning and cleaning up to prepare for spring planting, because I'm ready for the spring. I can't believe I'm saying that.
Well, I am so ready. But let me say this, from what you just said about your pruning, not so fast, Jenna. Not so fast. The blogs coming out of the University of Florida say don't react too quickly to cold damaged plants.
Really?
Oh, yeah. This temperature, of course, is a roller coaster in January and February. And some plants, let's just name a few, like oleander or hibiscus, bottle brush. We have right behind you out that window.
Oh, I love the bottle brush.
Is that bottle brush. Have probably suffered some cold damage. You can see on that bottle brush looking out the window.
She's
there.
Looking a little
brown. It's
got brown.
A little brown tips on it.
Mm-hmm.
And our false impulse is mine, too. And we talked about this last week a little bit. Is to go and cut out the dead and dying leaves and branches. But it's just not the best idea because we really don't know how much damage has been done or what's going to come back. So what we need to do is kind of wait. Wait till we get a little closer to spring, probably into March and April. Individual stems on some plants, and this goes way back, could have some split bark. Now, I'll never forget, way back, we've talked about this when we went to single digits in Pensacola, a lot of our basic plants, like the Japanese yew, which is a basic bulletproof foundation landscaping plant, looked okay after the freeze. Everything was fine. But during the summer, I kept hearing from people, my Japanese yews are dying. My Japanese yews are dying. What happened, that cold weather created split bark in the main trunks, main stems of these plants. And it took a long time, but they went downhill and many of them didn't make it. So the point is just kind of cool it, because here in February and in March, we easily can get some of these cold snaps, and let's just kind of wait. When as the blog says from the state, when spring has really sprung, you'll know what survived and what didn't. And then, after the new growth occurs, that's the time to prune. So kind of hold off a little bit. I did do a touch research, Jenna, on some temperatures here. In February, where we are right now, our average low is 44. Our average high is 65. 65 feels real good.
It does feel really nice after 40.
What day was it? Was it Sunday when it was such a beautiful day?
It was dreamy.
Day. Just great. And temperatures, I think, inched into the 60s on that day. In March, the average low is 50. It goes up, of course. The average high is heaven on earth, 71 degrees.
I believe that 73 degrees is the perfect temperature.
It is great. Then, of course, April, we're to 56 is a low, and average high is 77. So as we get out of February into March, it's gradually going to go up. But always remember that we have that potential April frost. I'm not sure when Easter is, but around Easter, we always have a little cold snap right before Easter.
It always happens. Sometimes it's Good Friday and it gets super cold, and then Easter, it's either really chilly that morning and warms up, but you just don't know. But okay, I get what you're saying.
And one last stat here on our little handy dandy chart that we use here on the Garden Line a lot. In the springtime, for temperatures to get to 32 degrees on March 13th, it's about a month from now, there's only a 10% chance we'll go to 32 degrees. And then after that, it just doesn't happen very often. So we're really talking about the middle of March to when we're totally out of the woods. So
it's funny because I'm watching the forecast right now as you're talking, and Sunday's forecast is saying a low of 32.
Say it in the so.
And that's the 13th. And it's a lucky day.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. I don't want to do that. In any event, we are on this roller coaster of temperatures, but the theme of that, all those remarks were just don't go out there and start cutting everything back just because they're brown. I look once again back at that bottle brush, which is out our window here. You would have a temptation to get your pruners that give it a light hand, like haircut, but I wouldn't do that. Just put up with it. And it's hard if you're a good gardener, which all our listeners on the Garden Line are, there's no exception. If you're a good gardener, you just kind of, you get real antsy when you look out your window or walk out on the patio, walk out to your flower bed, and you see all this brown, these plants that have suffered cold damage. You want to fix it. You just want to fix it. You want to fix it right then. And some people do. Some people try, and they get away with it. But if you listen to the experts from the Extension Services, they say don't. So
that's right.
That's the key.
Okay, so hold off just a little bit. We're going to talk, though, things that you can do right now in your yard and in your garden. But if you have a question, 850-437-1620. Here is a question real quick, Mike, before we dive in. First question, how do I treat, is it lichen? I forget.
Lichen.
Lichen. That's right.
A great
I'm sorry.
Question. That is a great
or that
question.
Moss.
Right.
You know, the one we're talking about that is growing on our listeners' trunk and limbs of their crepe myrtle. You see that everywhere.
You see that everywhere. And here's
and I forget why that is.
Well, it's just because the tree itself, or the plant, mainly it's trees, have somewhere along the line suffered some trauma. Too hot, too dry, too cold, too wet.
The season that we're in right now, you mean?
The season we're in right now, whatever. And you get the lichen, which is that gray, peely stuff. Now, some people call it a moss. It's not a moss. It's different. Moss grows more in the shade. Lichen grows more in the sun. It does absolutely no, and the experts will tell you this, no damage to the tree. And the only way to really treat it is to work hard on keeping that plant, whichever it is, that crepe myrtle is a good example, keeping it healthy. Mm-hmm. The right water, the right fertilizer, the right pruning, all of that stuff, do that. So experts also tell you on lichen, don't try to correct it by pulling it off, kind of peeling it off. That can do more damage than leaving it on. And as a matter of fact, it's not really going to do any damage. It's just really, it just doesn't look that great, but it's there. Some people call call some of the lichens moss, like deer moss. Some people say this is looks. There's one that's kind of a little larger than the gray one. They call it deer moss. Well, it's a lichen, but it's not a moss. So, any event,
words.
The lichen is something you really just all you have to do is look long term,
right?
And keep whatever plant has got it. Bring it back to good health. That's the best way to do it.
Okay, so stay on top of the watering and
exactly,
the pruning.
Exactly, exactly.
We have some more questions coming in, 850-437-1620, but we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll make sure we start getting to that to-do list, Mike, okay?
Okay,
I'm
ready.
We got a to-do list to get to. And again, get those questions in, 850-437-1620.
Make me love you.
You're listening to The Garden Line on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Jenna Barr with Mike Wiggins. If you have a gardening, yard, whatever question, yes, it can be about our precious armadillos, 850-437-1620. Our listener gave us a tip. This is pretty cool. We have a couple of texts coming in, and I'll promise we're going to get to them. But this is a cool tip. I did not think of this.
What is it?
So, did you know that old trampolines make awesome tarps for hauling leaves and debris? And they're usually free after hurricanes. So if you're driving by, you see somebody's throwing out a dilapidated trampoline, grab it and use it for your yard
I've
work.
I've never heard of that. That
How
is cool.
Is
That's
that?
A great idea. A great idea.
Thank you for that.
And let me tell you, if it's good for hauling leaves and that type of thing, just wait just a little longer when the oak tree leaves start falling. It won't be long. And then you're gonna need every tool you've got.
You need to stretch.
To get rid of those oak trees. I'll tell you, I bought a new blower, a little more powerful blower. So I'm getting ready for those oak leaves.
Did you get a gas-powered one? I know you were talking about getting one that you could,
I got a battery-powered
one. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And it's working out.
Oh, yeah. And it had something that said, this is the highest rate. It said, the hurricane, it's like a hurricane wind. I said, I'll buy it. Sign me up. In any event, I have this huge oak tree in my front yard. And just the oak leaves are horrible. They get in my neighbor's yard. And my neighbors accused me of blowing the leaves into their yard.
Oh, boy, if you're listening.
No, I did not do that, I promise.
I know you wouldn't do that.
Oh,
but let me tell
not.
You something. There is something invigorating when you are either operating, I mean, power tools just in general. There is something about it. You get so much stress out. It's kind of like that axe throwing, but you're like helping your yard. Like you're blowing the leaves or you're cutting something down with a chainsaw. It just feels good.
Well, it's some of our senior listeners will probably understand what I'm saying here. I need the battery powered tools because the old rotator cuff doesn't like to pull that cord. I pay the price for that every time I try to do it.
Yep.
So these battery tools are so nice. You just charge the battery, plug it in, and go.
I love that. And there's a lot of good ones on the market. If you have a favorite one, you can text it in. Again, our text line is 850-437-1620, or we'd love to hear your voice this morning on The Garden Line. Mike is here to answer your questions. Our friend Lisa from Milton texted in. She was wondering, she just picked some beautiful lettuce from her garden. And she's kind of wondering, how long will these types of things, whether it's lettuce, kale, those greens, how long will they last as things get warmer?
Oh, I think you can plant them. You probably can plant some of them right now. As we get into May, that's when we start to get into the hot temperatures, and some of those vegetables don't do that well. But for the most part, you can go all the way into the summer on a lot of these plants. Now, your lettuce and your collards and your turnips and that type of thing, oh, sure. A lot of people plant those in the spring. As a matter of fact, you know the most popular planting day ever for vegetable gardens? Good Friday.
Oh,
absolutely.
Really?
You'll find that, no question. If you look in the farmer's almanac books, or if you just go to a garden center that sells a lot of vegetable seeds, you'll see people lined up around the block because a lot of the, I'm going to say, senior vegetable growers will love to plant on Good Friday. Because they just say that's the time when they have found out over the years that their vegetable garden thrives. And so you could plant your lettuce in if you wanted to.
I feel like there's something spiritual about that, and I love it so much.
There you go. There you go. It could be.
I do.
A little divine intervention in our vegetable garden.
Amen to that. Okay. We are getting like Pentecostal up on the garden line this morning. 850-437-1620. We have some long questions that are more specific. I guarantee you, if you are sending in those specific questions with pictures, I will show those to Mike. Don't hold back on those either. We'd love to hear from you this morning, 850-437-1620. Oh, our friend Paul with Blue Sky Landscaping says that he actually uses oak leaves to mulch his beds at his house. They're free natural mulch.
Oh, good idea. A good idea. A lot of people, when they gather up the oak leaves, they'll shred them. And then they're really a good mulch. But you remember one thing about live oak leaves. You've got to remember, if you just rake them up and put them in your flower bed, that's okay. That doesn't hurt anything. However, remember that a live oak leaf is cupped, kind of like the palm of your hand. And if you just use it as is and put it in a flower bed, or quite frankly, don't even rake them up, you just leave them in your yard, they collect water. And when oak leaves collect water, some of the experts will tell you that can breed mosquitoes. So if you're going to use the oak leaves in your bed, that's great, but I would certainly have them kind of ground up and as you collect them with your lawnmower or however you do it. Yeah.
Okay, excellent. 850-437-1620. Is it too early to apply pre-emergence?
Oh, somebody has got a crystal ball and is reading my mind. That was the next thing I wanted to talk about.
Okay. Well, let's hop into it.
All right, here we go. All right, this could be a seminar, but we're going to try to give you the Cliff Notes version here. Okay, you ready? First of all, out in your yard right now, you've probably got poana, which is the annual bluegrass, a little bit of Florida betony, which is a rattlesnake weed, and some henbit and the chamber bitter, which some people call a little mimosa. The hot weather is going to take care of most of those weeds. As a matter of fact, the little chill we had may have taken care of some of them. What we need to worry about is future weeds, spring and summer weeds. To worry about those and to treat that, we need to put the pre-emergence herbicide on. I have always said I really like the middle of February. So here we are. We're very, very close, and it's time to do it. There are a couple of rules. One, find the right one that's labeled for your yard, like atrazine or dimension or pre-em or some of those on the market that are labeled for your yard. Be sure it says St. Augustine, if you have St. Augustine grass, or centipede, whatever. Be sure it's on the label. You can do it liquid. There's some granules you can use, but getting them on early. Because once those leaves sprout up, and as you know, like we just talked about the weather, we get into a period of 70 degrees in March, well, those weeds are going to come up real quick. You need to get that pre-emergence on there early, like middle of February, probably before February is over at least. But, John, and this is real important, real important. You'll go to your garden center and stacked up head high is bags of weed and feed fertilizer. I don't recommend those at all. The weed killer in the weed and feed fertilizer is great. Generally, I know a lot of them have atrazine in it, and that's fine. But it's much, much too early to start thinking about fertilizing your yard. You just don't want to do it. You want to do that later, into April, even into May, when that grass is out of dormancy. Then we fertilize it. The fertilizer in the weed and feed fertilizer is usually very high nitrogen, and here's what will happen. You'll put it on, and many, many times your yard will develop big spots. I call them, they're just yellow spots. They're kind of legal pad yellow, if you will, canary yellow. And that is something you really don't want. So if you use the pre-emergence, but use it only the pre-emergence weed killer, whatever form you decide to buy, and then we'll deal in fertilizer later. 1608 is the best. So.
Alrighty, 1608 is the best. Squeeze in more of those questions. I see y'all texting in, 850-437-1620. We're going to take another quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to go over and see what's happening in the news. to the Garden Line on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I got lots of texts coming in for you, Mike, and we will get to them, some specific that we can answer for you. But somebody asked, when do you plant grass seed? That goes along with our theme.
Exactly. The grass seed, that's an important question. Centipede grass seed is the best to plant. Now, I always say this, and this is going to sound really kind of stupid. Plant centipede grass seed when you are comfortable going to the Gulf, going to the beach and jumping in the Gulf. When it's warm enough to jump in the water, it's warm enough to plant centipede seed. Usually in May is when you want to do it. However, this is really important. We just talked about the pre-emergence chemicals, right?
Mm-hmm.
You do not want to use any pre-emergence chemicals, be it granular or liquid, if you're going to plant grass seed. Because it'll keep grass seed from coming up just like it'll keep weed seeds from coming up. So just steer clear of any pre-emergence, but then wait till we get into May to put out your centipede seed.
Excellent. All right, we've got more advice coming, and we'll answer all those questions. But we've got to take a break and see what's coming up in the news with Mark Jacobs.
Singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, 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 rockin' robin, tweet.
Hey, we're back here on the Garden Line. I'm Jenna Varr, hanging out with Mike Wiggins. If you have a question, 850-437-1620. It is just shy of 9:36, so squeeze those questions in. The text line is open, or we'd love to hear your voice this morning. Again, 850-437-1620.
How do you know Jenna Varr is back? Because at half an hour, or 30 minutes past the hour, Rockin' Robin is playing. When you hear that, you know Jenna is back. And it's good to have
you
back.
We are rocking this morning. It's a beautiful day. It looks like it's going to creep up to almost 60. So we are happy here in Northwest Florida. And we want to keep your gardens and your yardens happy as well. You like that?
I like it. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Hey, Paul also said, we were talking about when to plant grass seed, pre-emergence, all those things. And he was actually saying that centipede should be reseeded every 2 years to keep it thick because it thins out often.
That's not bad advice. And to be honest with you, it's inexpensive.
Okay.
You can buy, you're going to pay, I guess, in today's world, probably $30, maybe $35 for a pound. You can hold that in your hand. But see, that covers 2,000 square feet or more. And if you're overseeding, you can even probably put it out a little thinner. So per square foot, cost-wise, centipede seed is a bargain. Now, it's not easy to grow sometime. If you start out with just level soil and you're growing centipede grass seed, it can be difficult to grow. The weeds come in here, you've got to water it, and here come the weeds also. But it's an inexpensive way to put in a lawn. It really is. But preparation is number one, level, flat, soft, wet. It's got to be just right to sow that seed. And then I like to mix centipede seed with a little bit of builder sand to give it some bulk, because it is a little bitty seed, and you've got a little seed going over a big area. Mix a little bit of white builder sand in it, and then put it out with one of your hand seeders. Don't put it in your big fertilizer seeder, a little hand seeder. They're not too expensive either. And what you do, right before you put the centipede seed down, you rake the yard one way with your leaf rake. So you have little ridges there. Sow the centipede seed, then go back at right angles to that and sow them and rake it again. You don't have to bury all the seeds, just so it's kind of in a crevice there. And that's
crevasse.
The way you do centipede seed. But but going back to our original reason we got off on this topic is don't use any weed and feed or weed killer.
We should make t-shirts that say that, because you see it in the store, so you think that it's a good idea.
It is. Until your yard turns legal pad yellow. It's not such a good idea.
It looks like pee stains, and that's not cute.
We don't need that.
No, we certainly don't.
No,
we don't need that. So I like that. With the raking, so you can get those crevasses, as I say, and that way it creates little spots for it to grow. We did have a really cool question earlier, and if you have a question, 850-437-1620, or you can send us a picture, a comment. This is our friend was talking about they're looking for a low height bush for their home in their garden bed that's between their dark brick house and their pavers. They had some issues after Hurricane Sally. Probably some trees came down. Now there's full sun, and so they also have an irrigation system installed in the bed. So they're kind of looking for those low height bushes that can be planted and not be baked and fried by the sunshine.
That's a great question. It really is. And let me just give him just a. Off the cuff here, just a couple of suggestions. One, you've got an area that's full sun. The drip system is fabulous. Mm-hmm. A lot of us don't have that, but that's a great way to have your plants irrigated. So the drip system is really, really good. He's got about a 25-foot long bed, 4 foot wide. You've got to be careful, because one of the landscaping rules, which we've talked about here on the show, is this is going to sound kind of silly, but you need to be able to walk between your house and the shrubbery that you plant. In other words, you can't jam those plants up against the house because they're going to grow. And so you need that gap between them when you first plant them so you can walk between your house and the shrubs that you plant. Here are a couple of suggestions. One of the best is a holly. It's a dwarf yaupon. And remember this name, Jenna, we don't like it. The Ilex vomitoria.
Oh, it's delicious.
Oh, it's a horrible name, but I don't know how they ever did that. But it's a dwarf yaupon. It's a dwarf holly. We all know it. It's planted all over town. It's a low mounding plant. I've got some in my yard. I've been there for years. They've gotten up to almost 4 feet. But as a rule, you're going to plant probably a 3-gallon pot, which is going to be maybe a foot and a half, maybe a little bit more. But that's a dwarf yaupon. It is fabulous for an area that gets full sun, but it's low. It's a low plant. Another holly that's really good, has a little more green color to it, is a Carissa holly. Carissa holly is a great one. It's got a beautiful little leaf to it. It's very compact, and it too is a low-growing plant that would love the sun.
Ooh, I like that one.
Yeah. Now, here's another one. This would grow a little taller than the Ilex vomitoria or the dwarf yaupon, a Clara japonica. A Clara japonica has almost, if you've been gardening in Pensacola for years, you're familiar with red top, which we don't grow anymore because it got the disease and it died off. But the Clara japonica has a little bit of a bronzish new growth to it that's a little different than just being pure green.
Oh, they're so pretty.
And they are really a great plant. You're going to have to keep those pruned down a little bit to keep them relatively low, but that is another good plant. And here's another one that you might not have thought about for this gentleman's landscaping, is a dwarf nandina. A nandina, we're all used to the taller growing nandina, but over the past couple of decades, they've developed dwarf nandina, which get redder the colder it gets. And they're beautiful all year long. And so a dwarf nandina is a good idea. Now, if this gentleman, although he's got a drip system and he can water these plants, if you really want something that's going to put up with the heat, plant some of your new ornamental grasses. Plant some muley grass in there. And if you want to say, Mike, I'm not sure what that looks like, drive down Summit Boulevard and look at the landscaping at the airport. And also on Langley, where they have muley grass planted. In the fall, it'll send up these beautiful purple plumes. So those are just a few examples that you can do. I would suggest in a 25-foot bed, yeah, you may do a combination. In other words, maybe on the ends, put your ornamental grasses. In the middle, put your Ilex vomitoria or put your nandina. Just a combination of all of them. Don't overdo it because they're going to grow. And be sure you have away from the house enough so that they don't just all grow into the wall of the house. So, in any event, those are just a few suggestions.
Okay.
I'm sure Paul, a good buddy from Blue Sky, is out there.
He's
probably got some good suggestions also.
He's got a few as well. And then we've got a ton of questions coming in. We will get to them. But I want to just say Clara, Japonica, Carissa, Holly. You know, all of these. Paul just texted in a couple as well. He said the Gumpo Azalea and the Jazz Hands Lauropalladium?
The variegated lauropetalum?
Okay, I'm sorry. It sounds like we're casting Harry Potter spells, so please just bear with me. But I do love jazz hands. I'll do the jazz hands back here.
There we go.
But Paul does recommend those as well to take a look into, and they're both beautiful.
Yeah, Paul did a big landscaping. Remember we talked about the Apple Yard project?
Yes.
And he used some of these variegated lauropetalum there. And they really are an interesting plant. Lauropetalum also just comes in pure red. That may grow a little taller than our texture wanted because they really will get tall and they grow so fast. And you have to prune them a lot. But they're easy to prune. It's a very soft plant, very easy to prune. What else did he recommend? Jenna, I can't see it on my computer.
He also recommended the azalea.
The gumpo azalea.
Gumpo azalea.
I like those because they really are pretty. They're very, very compact. They take the sun more than your regular dwarf azalea.
Add some
the
color.
Only thing I found with the gumpo azalea, and you can relate to this, you've got soccer playing kids.
Oh, yes.
Is they're kind of fragile.
Frisbee playing.
They're a little bit fragile. Mm-hmm. And you get that. You put them in your front yard, and you get that soccer ball lands right in the middle of that gumpo azalea. Some plants will just bounce back. It won't bother them. Gumpo azaleas are a little bit fragile. You've got to be careful. So if you've got an athletic field that's your front yard.
Right. Don't do it.
Well, think about it. Just take a look at them. Yeah, exactly. Paul, of course, does this for a living every day, and his suggestions are always right on. So we appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Hey, we've got more questions coming in, but we do have to take a quick break here on the Garden Line. If you want to squeeze those questions in, please do. 850-437-1620. You're listening to News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Back here on the Garden Line, 850-437-1620. We got a lot of texts and calls coming in, so we're going to try to get to them as fast as possible. Let's first go on over to Mike from Pensacola. Mike, what's your question this morning?
Morning, Mike. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Mike. Good morning, and thank you all very much. Mike, I've got an invasion. We're talking about centipede. I've got an invasion of dollarweed.
Yes.
I think it came in on some pine straw mulch, and it's everywhere. What do I do to control it, and when do I apply any kind of herbicide on it?
Okay, the dollarweed is in the centipede and in pine straw bed. Is that true?
Both, yes.
Yeah, both. Okay, very good. Yeah, insofar as the dollarweed in the centipede, two things you would do. We talked about atrazine earlier being a key inhibits weed seeds from coming up. Well, one of the properties of atrazine is it will help in some instances as a post-emergence on broadleaf weeds, which that's what dollarweed is, a broadleaf weed. So if you put out your atrazine, say, middle of February, end of February, you not only will help inhibit future weeds, you might take care of some of those dollarweeds that are there right now. Now, the dollarweed in your pine straw flower bed or pine straw natural area, whatever it may be. Of course, one can, and you need to make this decision on your own, use Roundup. It's a chemical that has had a little bit of controversy. But if you use Roundup, it's probably too early to do that. Roundup only really works on actively growing weeds. Now, those dollarweeds are there, but I think in the cool weather, you may not get the results you would get if you wait till, let's say late April, when we sneak into the 80s. But in any event, so that's how you're going to get rid of them in your flower bed or in your natural areas, other than just pulling them, which you don't want to have to do. But think seriously about checking on that atrazine on the dollarweed in the centipede now and helping inhibit some of those summer weeds. That's the way I would go.
Okay. Anything that I can put down that will help with the dollarweed that won't kill my wife's flowers?
If you use Roundup, which is glyphosate, that's the name of the chemical, you can get right next to that petunia, right next to it, as long as you don't get it on the foliage. Now, some people, I've seen them do this, Mike, is they'll get a piece of cardboard, and if you've got a let's say you've got an azalea, for example. They'll put that cardboard right in front of that azalea and then spray that Roundup on the weeds that are on your side of the cardboard. As long as you don't get glyphosate on the foliage of a plant, you're okay, because it does not translocate from the soil into desirable plants. That's why it's used all over the world, is that it does not sterilize the soil. So that's one way to do it, and that's probably the only chemical I know that would do that. Now, there are some granular pre-emergence that you can put, preen I think is one of them, you can put out in your wife's flower bed that won't damage the existing flowers but will inhibit summer weeds from coming up. It's not perfect, but it will act as a pre-emergence, just like the pre-emergence works in a lawn, it works as a pre-emergence in a flower bed. I don't think you're going to get any post-emergence help out of it, but it will help with future weeds. You might look into that. You can buy that at any garden center. I've seen it in little shaker cans. You just shake the granular on the flower bed where the weeds have become a problem and see if you can get some results. That's the way to do that.
Great. Thank you very much for the help.
Hey, thank you for calling, Mike. We always appreciate you calling. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mike. Good to hear from you. 850-437-1620. What is the easiest way to get rid of a century plant?
Move. No.
Oh, no.
I'm just kidding.
Okay.
No, if it's one of those big century plants, in my opinion, that's just manual labor. You've got to get somebody somehow to dig it up. One of the biggest battles I ever had was getting rid of a sago palm, which it's not the same, but it's kind of the same principle.
Yeah.
They've got pretty strong root systems. They really do. And so it's going to take, if you're in a situation where you could even dig around it and pull it out with a car or a Jeep or
use a chain
or what have you, that might help you. But it's not easy. And to me, I know of no chemical that is going to get rid of it. You might use some of your brush killers on it, which might kill the plant, but you've still got the dead plant and the roots that you've got to get rid of. So I would simply consider doing some digging and pulling to get rid of it. I don't really know of another way to do that.
Okay, excellent. A couple more questions here, 850-437-1620. We also do have a couple of suggestions here, and I'm trying to get to it. So actually, one of our listeners said that they let their centipede seed out naturally starting in September. They just cut and water in after cutting, and they've never had to buy seed again.
Yeah, and that's a very good point, because you're going to cut it. Obviously, you're not going to collect your clippings. You're going to let it all come back into the lawn, which takes those centipede seeds back into the lawn. That's a great suggestion. I'll be honest with you. A lot of people who have sown centipede as a lawn, once they get it established, probably don't reseed very much. Some do if it starts to thin out, but if it continues to grow and gets lush and you've watered it and fertilized it and everything is in pretty good shape, I think that suggestion is very valid. Just cut it, let your clippings go back into the yard, and have at it. The only problem about letting the clippings go back into the yard, if you've got a major weed problem, then you're sending those weed seeds back into the yard too. But if you want to get those centipede seeds back, that's not a bad suggestion at all. Thank you.
Oh,
good
yeah,
one.
Absolutely. And our friend Joseph, who listens, he texted in a picture, and that's what I was thinking. You can rent one of those, if you're trying to get rid of that century plant, you can rent one of those, like, excavator, the mini ones, you know? You like the way that I'm motioning like a praying mantis?
I wish we were on TV.
Because
Jenna's impersonation of a front-end loader. Pretty good, though. I think I understand exactly what you're saying.
You push it.
An excavator. I think that's a good word.
My dad had, like, the equipment when we were growing up. Like, we had a backhoe for snow because it snowed so much growing up. So I kind of know different ones, but this one I don't know, and it's like the baby one. Anyways, you can rent
exactly
those,
too. I know exactly what you're talking about.
The mini hoe rented at Home Depot.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go.
So there you go. Listen, you're trying to get out that century plant. Go for
it. It's not easy.
No.
A mature one is not easy.
No. We got to take another quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to share as we close how to eradicate hundreds of palm tree seedlings that are anywhere from 2 to 6 inches tall. That's our last question here on the Garden Line this morning. We'll be right back. We are wrapping up our time this morning, this beautiful Tuesday morning on the Garden Line. Mike will be back next Tuesday. It'll be the day after Valentine's Day. But how do you get rid of all those palm tree seedlings?
That's a tough one. That's a very tough one. You could use some brush killer, but that kind of sterilizes the soil. You can't use it in flower beds. Can't even use it in lawns. Some people just mow them down. Keep them mowed down, and eventually you've got them under control.
Okay.
Also, Lisa, thanks for the text, is saying that when you're removing a century plant, don't cut off the fronds, limbs, whatever you want to call it. It'll burn your skin. I did not know that. Be careful. She said she learned the hard way.
Yeah.
So
be careful and share those tips with us. Join us next Tuesday, 9 a.m. here on the Garden Line. Mike, it's good to be back.
Oh,
Tammy
Jenna,
and
good
Possum,
to have you back. It
back
really
together.
Is.
We'll talk to you soon and stay tuned. Bob Burgee will be here next.